Hello and welcome to another episode of On The Topic. This week I'm a representative of the nefarious by and large, but who are they and why are they behind all of this? I'm Alex.
And it's quite good to be back to doing what we actually do after an episode of literally talking about poo. I'm Dan.
And in our last episode it was the mad pooper, wasn't
yes.
it, Dan?
Numbers speak for itself. Apparently you lot like listening to things about shit. Literally.
Don't we all? Episode 108, The Mad Pooper. It's not highbrow, as you'd expect, but it's not quite so depraved as it could be, right, Dan?
No.
We talk about some medical conditions. We talk about some actual factual news from, was it 2018, 2017?
Yes, 2017.
And we give you all the facts about this very strange, what ends up being internet phenomena.
It went viral. It literally went viral.
All around the world.
I mean, I'd never heard of it until my friend suggested we do this episode. But, I mean, in some aspects, while it was quite funny, there is some educational parts to it. So, you know, we try to keep it balanced.
And then I throw in there about the poop noodle.
Yeah, no one needs to know about the poop noodle.
Don't Google it. Put down the phone. Listen to us instead. Do not, whatever you do, Google poop noodle. And do not, whatever you do, press play on that music video, because I take no responsibility for what I just asked you not to do. I was being very clear, Dan, wasn't I?
Yes.
I said, don't do it.
But if you do listen to it, it's the most unexpected song.
You don't think, because if you take the lyrics, by the way, listener, do not look at the lyrics. But if you took the lyrics, it's like a rap song, but it's a country music.
Yeah.
It's like a country rap. Do not listen to it, listener.
We literally listened to it for the first time and the only time at the pub last week before we went to some sort of open evening at
Good
New
old
Creative.
Network. Yeah.
And we weren't expecting that literal music to come out of your phone.
Can you call it music? I mean, the backing track was, I guess.
I mean, she had a very nice voice.
I think that's all about positively about it, really. That's
yeah.
Pretty dank. But anyway, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about it's a bit about the rabbit hole and a bit about movies, Dan, aren't we?
Yes.
Where did this come from? Do you remember? And what we talk about this week?
I think this was suggested by my other half. So we're going to be talking about the Pixar theory.
Or Disney.
Disney. Yeah. If you go back a couple of episodes where I managed to mint my words. Not Disney Pixar, but Disney.
Disney.
This is a new term now for the podcast.
It is. And this probably could be a volume one, because I think when you've got to draw a line under somewhere, because otherwise this is going to be a 2.5 hour episode, because there's so many Easter eggs and there's so much detail around all of these films being interconnected and why and what does that could that mean and the rest of it. And we want this to be relevant.
Yes.
We can't have you guys listen to this all the time. You've got your lives to live and shopping to buy and, you know, daily commutes to undertake. So we're going to do a volume one. And if you guys like it and you give us some feedback or you've got the streams and listens, then we'll do more.
Yeah.
But this in itself is quite an interesting concept. There's nothing else. We don't do a volume two or three or whatever. Something to look out for when you watch your next favourite Pixar movie.
I mean, it's fair to say you touched on Easter eggs. That would literally be an episode in itself. There's so many Easter eggs dotted around each film. I think I read that got the young girl's name from Inside Out, but she appears in Finding Dory looking through one of the glass tanks.
Right.
It's little things like that, so
it's all connected.
It's all connected.
And I guess, Dan, where we should probably start, because that's what we're talking about. The Pixar theory. It's not a theory that Pixar exists. It's not about the art studio that Disney own. It's about the fact that a lot of the films actually all connected. They're all part of the same universe. You never say Alex Dan duh, because they're part of the same studio, but it goes more than that, doesn't it, Dan? Actually,
oh, yeah.
Believe it or not, there may be, although there is some stretching here, there could be a woven narrative thread throughout all these films. Except, well, Alex, how is it that, you know, a film about toys, sentient toys, have anything to do with a rat who directs a poor chef around a kitchen in France?
But you could argue it'd have something to do with the villain from The Incredibles.
Or perhaps The Incredibles, as you say, to Cars. What about Wall-E? Well, we're going to give you probably enough to whet your appetite, but there's lots of reading around this. But what I was going to start off with, Dan, is where this came from.
Yes.
It's an author. His name's John Negroni. And he's a copywriter, movie blogger based out of San Francisco, California. Now, he came up with the idea of the Pixar theory that we're going to be talking about today. Back in 2012, after watching a video on the website cracked.com, he saw a video and he thought it was so compelling he wanted to look into it more, and he's actually fleshed out the theory and almost made it in his own.
Still ongoing as well, when you look at, you know, more Pixar films coming out each year as we go along.
And the more Easter eggs, the more kind of adds fuel to the fire, Dan, I guess. And since then, he has got a detailed essay, and he's since made it into a book. So he's banked this. Lovely chap here on Google. He's cutting some moves on the dance floor in his...
quite literally, yeah.
In his suit and his bold glasses. Looks like an intelligent chap. But anyway, name's John Negroni. So he didn't come up with this, by the way, obviously. This guy did, and he's obviously made a packet out of it. So we're going to be talking about a range of films. The original theory, but I think you dance in and around it, Dan. That's
a little
fine.
Bit, yeah.
That's fine.
We'll try and pick or put together this timeline between us. Because once again, we haven't shared our notes.
No.
Really.
Now, the main meat and potatoes, as you'd say, would be starting off with Toy Story in 1995.
Yeah.
All the way up to 2013, Monsters, Inc., University.
Yeah.
But there are other things, bookends either side of that, and films since then released. And what we then do is we'll turn it into, that's the release date, but the chronological date. Because they actually don't all happen in that order.
No.
They happen in different settings. What I'd say is I do very much... I mean, what's your thoughts? Before we get into it, Dan, what's our thoughts or your thoughts on Pixar movies? Because it's you're either Pixar or your DreamWorks.
Is it? I'm more of a Pixar fan, to be honest.
Yeah.
I still remember going to see Toy Story at the cinema way back in 1995. Me, just knocked the microphone stand, so if you hear a noise, that was me. Going back to the cinema all the way back in 1995 with my cousin, my uncle, my auntie. Love that film.
Yeah.
I still love it now, and it holds up so incredibly
well.
It
really does. The CGI isn't clanky. It's smooth. It's still well designed. The old, it is an old film, and it doesn't look that bad at all, really.
No, it's well polished.
Script works great. The voice work, of course, is second to none.
I do need to sort of dive in again to the Pixar films proper. The films I didn't really sort of quite enjoy as they started to come out, like The Incredibles, Cars.
What? The Incredibles is amazing.
But I love Wall-E. I've got the Lego set of Wall-E on
my
shelf.
It's very depressing, though, as a concept.
Yeah. But then aren't all most of the Pixar films? I mean,
yes.
We mentioned this in Saddest Deaths. You know, we talked about...
Up.
The Good Dinosaur was mentioned by my other half.
Yeah. I haven't seen that, but I guess it's...
It's quite bleak. It's very... got a bit of a Lion King-esque...
Oh, God.
...death in that, so just brace yourself for that one.
Don't need that. No spoiler alert? Nah, I mean...
No.
Been out for a while, these.
And we're not really spoiling anything, per se. We're not going through the plot of the film. We're just talking about where they lay in this potential timeline that John Negroni's put together for us.
And before we get into the films... There's three things that are really in common, or two things really. The rise of AI, Dan.
Yeah.
And the shadow corporate government, which is by and large. It's all those themes are throughout all of these films, apparently, says Negroni. Mm. But do you want to kick us off? I've got my notes here, and then we'll riff off each other.
Yep, I noticed you start off with Brave, but when I sort of dived
into it.
We've got The Good Dinosaur, which just mentioned, and Saddest Movie Deaths a couple of episodes ago, or three episodes ago. Now, The Good Dinosaur is a movie that started Pixar's universe 65 million years ago, according to the Pixar theory, when an asteroid misses the Earth, saving dinosaurs from extinction.
Mm.
Now, that prompted species to evolve much further than expected, becoming highly intelligent. Therefore, it can be inferred that animals can be just as intelligent as humans, and the latter were not interfering in their evolution. So basically what John Negroni's saying is humans basically screwed up animals.
Yep. I don't think there's any arguments there.
Something that is extremely important in the following stages of this theory. And then I go on to Brave.
Brave. Well, if you look at his original... book, so to speak, because I think there's now three different chapters as the films progress and expounds upon the theory. He says that Brave is the first and the last movie in the timeline, and of course, I think what you're referring to is probably, I think, book three. But apparently this is a movie, I haven't seen it, by the way, but I know bits and pieces.
Oh, it's quite good.
Is it?
I saw it at the cinema. When was it released? 2012?
Let's have a quick look. Yeah, 2012. A movie about a Scottish kingdom during the Dark Ages. It's the earliest period at that time covered by Pixar films, but it's the only Pixar movie that actually explains why animals in the Pixar universe behave like humans sometimes. The term is also a term which I could never pronounce at school, which is called anthropomorphic tendencies, which is where animals behave or look like humans. Now, in Brave, Merida discovers there is magic that can solve her problems, but inadvertently turns her mother into a bear.
Yes, yes, she does.
If you inadvertently turned a loved one into something, what would it be, Dan? If you had the magical abilities and, yeah, had a bit of a whoopsie, what would that be?
I'd turn my missus into a cat, to be honest.
A cat?
I think I'd turn it.
But is that on purpose, though? Because you like cats. You got Quill.
Oh, yeah, fair point. So are we saying, like, an oopsie and, like, oh, I've just turned her into a...
Yep.
Into, like, a bear. Maybe a panther, then.
A panther. Doesn't have to be an animal, but we'll go with panther.
As long as it's nothing like a spider, but that's not an animal, is it, per se?
No. I think I'd probably turn someone into a chair.
A mice.
Yeah.
Inanimate.
But talking. Got the eyes and the mouth, but that's it.
Would you annoy them by sitting on them?
Depends on the family member. if I didn't have coasters, I would put them on coasters. I'd wheel them around. I think it'd be hilarious. But that's why I'm not a script writer, Dan.
Yeah.
Because no one else thinks that's funny. And that's why I don't have powers. And we find out the magic comes from, going back to Brave, that the magic comes from an odd witch seemingly connected to the mysterious Will o' the Wisps. Not only do we see animals behaving like humans, but we also see brooms, which are inanimate objects, you mentioned, Dan, behaving like people in a witch's shop. Now, we also learn this witch inexplicably disappears every time she passes through doors. Hold that thought.
Okay.
Because that's not the only relationship with doors in a Disney Pixar movieverse.
I know where you're going.
Leading us to believe that she may not even exist. Let's just say for now that is enough on Brave, unless you've got anything else on that one.
I've got in my notes, set in the 10th century. That's probably all I can add to that. Yeah. So that's where the next part of the timeline is. Then I go on to The Incredibles.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which
crack
is
on.
Quite odd.
Yep.
Besides animal evolution, the Pixar theory states that there is yet another important and crucial development for this universe, the evolution of artificial intelligence.
Yes.
As you mentioned earlier, which will eventually lead to a battle for power between humans and machines.
Yep.
Now, this can be seen in The Incredibles, set between 1950 and 1960. Now, this is a period in which humans are the dominant species and superheroes keep order in the world. Not like Marvel. All this change when Syndrome uses AI to create an Omnidroid to get rid of superpowers. Eventually, this robot no longer responds to Syndrome and starts attacking humans, which could signal, or would signal, a potential uprising of the machines against the human race through a faceless corporation commonly known as By and Large.
Yes.
Another side effect of the Omnidroid's creation is that, from that point on, inanimate objects start soaking up residual electromagnetic energy from the air, becoming animated. Or animate.
So this is the beginning of the rise of the machines.
Yeah. Bit Terminator-esque. So then I've got Toy Story next, which sort of makes sense from that last statement about the residual electromagnetic energy.
Okay.
So Toy Story. Since the Incredibles, humans turned out to be more powerful than the Omnidroid. Artificial intelligence started using human energy to feed itself and evolve. That can be seen in Toy Story, which is set approximately in the year of 1995.
Yes.
What a coincidence, the year it was released. By that time, the consequences of electromagnetic energy in the air become obvious. Toys have their own consciousness and unbeknownst to them, are using the owner's affection as energy to survive.
Oh.
Now, the energy? Shut up, Dan. Now, the theory suggests that, by and large, Corporation is responsible for developing all the toys in the movie and its sequels, aiming to harness human energy. At the same time, in the Toy Story film series, there are some references to the resentment that certain toys have towards humans because of their wrongdoings.
Yes, it's seen with the toys rising up against Sid in the first movie, who tortures the toys in quite a harrowing and distasteful way.
Yeah.
Dolls' heads on spiders' bodies and...
Like Meccano, wasn't it?
Yeah, quite grim.
Anyone who isn't familiar with what Meccano is, I'm obviously going back to my childhood, it's like the metal rods and you screw them together and you can make things
out. It's still around, but I'm not sure whether... Yeah. Bought my son some last Christmas. He was interested, but it's not Lego. Maybe it's a bit too soon.
Lego is life.
It is.
I did scratch my mum's newly painted table with Meccano once.
Oh.
Yeah.
But she loved you.
I got a Meccano set which you could build into a lorry and add like a little motorised engine on it, so you'd turn it on and move.
Yeah.
And it's my mum at the time, she'd had this
table. Is she not your mum now? Did she disown you?
I'm surprised she didn't.
Okay.
Or she did. So she had it all, I guess, sandpapered and polished all nice. It was marbled. It was really nice. It was nice. And so I got my grubby mitts on there and
Goused it.
Threw my Meccano on it, yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah, she was not best pleased. I'm surprised she still loves me now.
Mm.
Some 30 years on.
But if she didn't, that she's holding quite the grudge.
Yeah.
So.
Might ask her at the weekend, Mum, thoughts on the Meccano when I scratched your really nicely newly painted table?
Do you want to still have a mention in the will? You don't want a reminder?
No, maybe not.
No. Anything else on Toy Story movies?
No. I then go on to Ratatouille, Finding Nemo and Up.
Ratatouille. Yeah. So.
Good film, by the way.
No, definitely. Ratatouille. In Ratatouille, we see animals experimenting with their growing personification in small controlled experiments. Remy, well, he wants to cook, which is something only humans really do. He crafts a relationship with a small group of humans and finds success. And meanwhile, the villain of Ratatouille, which is Chef Skinner, disappears. Well, what happened to him? What did he do with his newfound knowledge that animals were capable of transcending their instincts and performing duties better than humans? We don't know. There is a possible link to Up, but before we get into that, you got any other expansions on Ratatouille and the anthropomorphic aspects of that rat?
No, but if anyone can find me a Remy that can sit on my head and make me cook even more delicious food than I already do, send him my way.
That'd be quite useful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because you'd learn as you're being controlled.
Such a good film, though. It's a great film.
It's really good. When it first came out, I thought it was okay. And then since I've had my little boy, and I introduced it to him, as ironically or not, as the case may be, we went on holiday to France a couple of years ago. I showed it to him, and I got into it again.
Mm.
And actually, it's a really clever, heartwarming film. No one dies in it, really.
No.
It's just all about friendship and wonder and people reaching their destiny and their, you know, the height of their abilities. It's a really good film.
Yeah.
We'll enjoy it. What's up? What's next?
I go on to Finding Nemo. Then it goes back to Ratatouille, which was quite odd. Quite fascinating. So in Finding Nemo, set approximately in 2003, of course the year it was released, the underwater world, for instance, has the same organisation as a human society, and the animals have been exposed to humans are more skilled. Such is the case of Dory, who was born in captivity and can read and speak other languages. Fast forward to 2007, in Ratatouille, this is further evidenced by Remy, who loves the human culture and becomes the best chef in France, far better than any human. That confirms the theory that human energy is the most powerful thing in the world. That same year, Up depicts that humans are already aware of animal intelligence and tried to harness it for their own benefit. This can be seen, for instance, in the special collars that allow dogs to talk. I forgot about the talking dog.
Yeah, those collars indicated to Muntz, who's Charles Muntz, the antagonist, that the animals are smarter and more like humans than we actually think.
Yeah, I've got the evolution of artificial intelligence and that of animals become unified.
Yeah, and continuing with that theme on lines being crossed, if you look at Finding Nemo, B&L, by and large, show up again in this universe via another news article that talks about a beautiful underwater world. Humans, at this stage, are beginning to antagonise the increasingly networked and intelligent animals of the sea. So, there's intelligence there, and there's an awareness by and large that the animals are starting to rise up.
Yeah, to further that on, by and large, an industrial expansion that will eventually lead to environmental damage. At the same time, animals also start to resent humans for their deeds.
We know who else resents, by and large. Carl. Carl, who lost his poor wife in the opening 9 minutes of that bloody film that had me in tears and I could never watch it again. Up.
Yeah.
A corporation buys up his land because they want to expand the city. It's by and large, Dan. They're everywhere. They're throughout this.
It's a bit like Roxxon in Marvel, isn't it? They're everywhere.
I do wonder whether Roxxon's going to crop up at some point and become more of that kind of that nefarious organisation that they end up becoming. You got AIM, which of course was Advanced Idea Mechanics.
Yes.
And that was like a think tank that went off a bit rogue. So too Roxxon. I mean, that's more heavily featured in Daredevil and Iron Fist, and they're more nefarious in there. But yeah, I hope Roxxon ends up becoming, because they turned up in Iron Man 3, didn't they?
Yeah.
When they were the president was in the Iron Patriot armor, was hanging off a Roxxon oil tanker.
I'm sure it was teased in one of the Spider-Man films as well. I want to say.
Yeah, I think it was the last one.
No Way Home.
Yeah.
Only very briefly, if you had your eagle eyes on.
If you know what to look for.
So after those films, I'd go into Inside Out and Coco.
Okay.
What have you got?
I have got Wall-E.
Oh,
but okay. That's later in time, so yeah, fabulous. Crack on.
So Inside Out and Coco contribute to the theory with some significant insights. The former reveals that the source of humans' energy lies in their emotions, and these dominate all of their actions. Furthermore, people's energy differs depending on their sense of imagination. Of course, Bing Bong, part of the imagination, wasn't he?
True. Oh, yeah, poor
Bing Bong. Also in Saddest Movie Deaths. There's a lot of sad movie deaths from the Pixar universe, apparently.
Yeah. They put on the heartstrings.
All our episodes are somehow stitched together.
All connected.
Like this universe.
Yeah.
Coco, on the other hand, focuses on the importance of memory for survival and what happens to energy after death. People who die can continue to live in the land of the dead as long as their loved ones remember them. This is quite similar to what happens to Bing Bong in Inside Out, who lives on Riley's memory until he is forgotten.
Very sad.
Who's your friend that likes to play bing bong, bing bong? And he sacrifices himself. And then go on to Soul. So again, this is another film that sort of touches on the afterlife.
I've heard that Soul's really good. I haven't seen that one either.
I want to say I have. Was it released during COVID?
I think
times?
It was, or just before. It's was it a musical one?
Yeah.
Where a young boy doesn't want to try and reconnect with his dead relatives.
I think it's very similar to Coco. It might be Coco that I've definitely seen. Soul, I'm not too sure.
Okay.
Now, Soul has not formally been integrated into Negroni's theory yet, but in videos on his YouTube channel, John, in theory, he muses over the possibility that Soul and Coco explore two sides of the same afterlife. The forces who control the afterlife in Soul say that they are presenting the afterlife in a way that can be comprehended by the souls passing through. This opens up the possibility that different cultures may have a different look or dimension for their afterlife. Like in Coco, souls who are not ready to go to the great beyond and have unfinished business continue to exist in an area where they may be able to interact with the living. Living?
The living.
I need to put my teeth in.
Yep.
However, if a soul feels they are already on the move, perhaps because there is no one left alive who remembers them, then they move on peacefully.
Hmm.
And then I've got Wally Part 1.
Wally, yeah. As the results up until this stage of sentient animals or anthropomorphic animals and sentient AI, Earth eventually becomes unfit for planet, or the Earth becomes unfit for humans and animals. And so the remaining humans are put on the Axiom, which, of course, if you remember that film, is a big old hulking spaceship where all of the fat humans are flying around on their chairs.
Yeah, it's quite morbid, isn't it?
It is, and it's all because of by and large.
Of course.
BNL in Wall-E, they were indicated that they were going to bring the humans back once the planet was clean again, but they failed. The machines on Earth eventually died out, though we don't know how, and there's of course just a little Wall-E that's left behind. To look over quite a sad and depressing planet Earth covered in dust and rusting metal. Now on planet Earth, the machines have made humans dependent on them for everything, on the Axiom, should I say, made them dependent for everything, and it's because how they were treated as toys. So this is actually the machines fighting back now from all of the previous films before. And humans are dependent, they are floating on these things, they are being fed by these things, they're being entertained by these things. It's all they know. Now, whilst on Earth, machines are left behind to populate the world and run things, explaining human landmarks and traditions still being prominent in the film Cars. So this is where we have a reference to no humans during the Cars film and franchise, but we've got these sentient vehicles running around behaving like humans and still having all the hallmarks of cities that we know and love.
Yeah, I can only add to that with a timeline. So the opening of the film spans from 2057 to 2110, presents an alarming scenario that has now been warned about in other films because of BNL.
Yeah,
the Earth is no longer suitable for living, so in 2105, BNL evacuates all humans in order to restore the planet. And as you say, we go on to Cars, which spans from 2110 to 2804.
Yes.
I don't know where he's plucking these years from, but whatevs.
Whatevs, straight into the future. Quite far into the future.
Yep, so no humans are left on Earth. Machines are responsible for inhabiting the world, as we see in Cars, as you mentioned. However, even though there are no humans, their influences still remain. And it is the relationship of the cars with their former owners that allows them to remain sentient and fill their place. At this time, cars start searching for their life purpose while still carrying on human traditions in their absence. But this doesn't last forever. In Cars 2, an energy crisis is exposed, and with no connection to humans, machines can no longer survive.
Bleak. Have you seen people's other depiction of why humans aren't in the film Cars? And have we seen this together? Have we shown you this? Have you seen this?
No.
Yeah, someone's basically drawn a really depressing image of like a deformed human being that is actually inside the car. And we have to use cars in order to live because we're unable to stand on our own 2 feet anymore. We've had to depend upon these life-giving chassis. It's really grim. If I can put it onto the blog, I will, because it's depressing as.
Oh my god.
But yeah, it's basically, they're not anthropomorphic, they're not sentient. It's that humans are inside these vehicles and they're grotesque and hideous because we have to rely upon cars to move us around.
Christ, it's a good job really I bleak. Walk most places, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. That leads on to Bug's Life, apparently.
Oh, well, I've got Wall-E Part 2.
All right. Go on to Part 2. Then we'll
sort of sandwiches Cars, which was quite fascinating when you look at the theory.
Yeah.
Following the events that took place in Cars comes a key character for the Pixar theory, which is Wally. This robot is the only one of his kind that survived. Thanks to the energy generated by his connection with humanity from the objects he collected. Now by 2805, Wally allies with an EV unit and makes the Earth habitable again, offering humans a new beginning. This film also features two elements that will be significant for the next stage of the timeline. The planet's one remaining living plant and a cockroach.
And it's that plant that ends up becoming a mighty tree, and that tree looks very similar to that in Bug's Life.
Yes.
But there's something strikingly different about Bug's Life compared to other Pixar films about animals, which leads Negroni to believe in a certain direction for the future. Now, unlike Ratatouille or Up and Finding Nemo, these bugs in this film have many human activities similar to what the rats in Ratatouille were merely experimenting with. The bugs of cities, bars, advertisements, their own machines, know what Bloody Mary is, and even have a travelling circus. And this all assumes that the movie is in a different time period. Now, the other factors that set A Bug's Life apart from other films is that, well, besides Cars and Cars 2, this doesn't revolve or even include humans. So what's next? Well, humanity, machines, animals, apparently from that point on, thanks to the events of Wall-E, grow in harmony to a point where there is a super species which is born.
I presume you're going to go on to Monsters, Inc.
Monsters.
Well, this is a film that was sort of questionable in the timeline, so I've got something that goes in between. So you've sort of dived into like the original book, haven't you?
Yeah.
Which was Onward. Now, I saw articles which suggested it doesn't really fit the timeline, but somehow Negroni has found a place for it. So for quite a few years, the Pixar theory was vague about how A Bug's Life eventually connects with Monsters, Inc. However, Onward finally filled in some of the gaps. Well, sort of. In an update from Negroni, he explains that there are two main ways that it fits into the theory.
Okay.
The first is that the humans who returned to Earth eventually evolved into the elves seen in the movie, and they are able to use their emotions as magic. However, they eventually lose this power and start to die off, leaving the other creatures in the world to evolve into monsters. The other theory is that the humans evolved into elves and then eventually into monsters.
Interesting. You'd kind of shoehorn that in, but that could work. But either way, we end up in a timeline way 4,500 to 5,000 AD. Now in this, the monster civilization is actually Earth in the incredibly distant future. Where they come from, well, it is possible, as you say, Dan, that the monsters are the continuation of human evolution, or it's actually the animals that have mutated after the Earth was diseased and irradiated for 800 years during the events of Wall-E. Now, whatever the reason, the monsters seem to all look like horribly mutated animals, only large and civilized. They have cities and even colleges, as we see in Monsters University. In Monsters, Inc., of course, what do they all become obsessed with to run their cities? Human energy.
Yep.
There's an energy crisis because in the future there is no humans. So this is talking about the relationship with humans and with animals. Humans are the source of energy, but thanks to machines again, the monsters find a way to use doors to travel the human world, only it's not different dimensions. Interesting enough, Negroni actually says the monsters are going back in time, Dan.
Yeah.
This is where it goes back to Brave, which I mentioned at the top of the episode. Now, if they're going back in time, they're actually harvesting energy to keep from becoming extinct by going back to when humans were most prominent, the peak of the civilization. Now, though a lot of time has passed, animosity towards humans never really went away from the animals or the monsters. The monsters have relied upon anti-human instincts to believe that just touching a human would corrupt their world as it did in the past. And so they scare humans to gather their energy until they realise that laughter, or as you put it here, green energy, is more efficient because it's positive. That said, Monsters, Inc. is the most futuristic Pixar movie to date. By the end, humans, animals and machines have finally found a way to understand each other and live harmoniously. But Dan, it's all connected because there's Boo.
Yes.
Got any notes on Boo?
I'm just having a quick look, just scouring towards the end. Her fondness for Sully is the foundation stone of the entire Pixar universe.
Wow.
Boo's story is not complete because she has not yet managed to reunite with Sully. But to find out if she really pulls it off, we have to wait for new Pixar films to be released so that Negroni can further expand on this theory. But I'm going to presume you've got something more on Boo.
Perhaps. Obviously, they build a relationship and she ends up, saving saving the day. Now, she became obsessed with what happened to her friend Sully when she becomes older and why animals in her time were quite as smart as the ones she's seen in the future. And she remembers that doors are the key to how she found Sully in the first place and becomes a witch. Yes, Boo is a witch from Brave.
So we've come full circle then.
Yeah, she figures out how to time travel to find Sully and goes back to when she believes it's the source, which is the Will of the Wisps back in Brave. They are then where everything started, and as a witch, she cultivates his magic in an attempt to find Sully by creating the doors, going backwards and forwards in time.
And part of the theory I've got here is that she travelled around different eras. She accidentally left behind some items from the other films.
Yep.
Which would explain all these different Easter eggs.
She's going through these doors and she's dropping stuff off, and as she's picking up all through these different films, she's leaving Easter eggs. I think in Brave there's a wood carving cutout of the pizza delivery van from Toy Story. Of course, she would have only known that had she visited and she'd been through one of those doors and visited that universe.
Yes.
So this little girl that we find happened in her time ends up becoming a witch, travels back to what is the 14th, 15th century under Brave in Scotland, trying to find her friend Sully. There's all the way up, what is that now, 4,000 years in the future.
I'd say the Easter eggs, it's probably an episode in itself, and maybe we'll come back to it sort of maybe towards the end of the year. But it's quite fascinating when you look at how many different things are in different films.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to have eagle eyes. You know, this is like Marvel and their Easter eggs.
But on steroids, it's a blink and you miss it kind of thing. It's not like there's a comment here or there's a lingering shot where, Jon Favreau or anyone else has done the audience a solid. These things are a single frame. And if you miss it, you won't see it.
But this is why we do these episodes, so you don't have to. So you don't have to look out for these things. But when we tell you where it is, or when it happens, when you watch that film next, you'll see it and you go, oh yeah, and you'll never unsee it ever again.
Indeed. We're ruining films for you like we've done so far before. Anything else on the Pixar theory, Dan?
No, that was it for me.
So the original books, there's the different theories by Negroni. The original, so Volume 1, that ranges from 1995 to 2013. That's 14 films. 1995 to 2013, as I mentioned at the top of the episode. But in the chronological date, you're looking at the 14th century all the way to 4,500 or 5,000 AD. It's bonkers.
Yeah.
But is there any truth in it, Dan? I mean, what do you reckon? Do you think that this is... Do you think it's all connected? Do you think it's something which Pixar meant for us to do, or was it just a case of it's all laid out there and we've come up, Negroni's come up with his own narrative? What are your thoughts on it?
I think there's something in it, I mean, whether this timeline that Negroni's come up with is accurate, I don't know.
No.
But there, I feel like it's quite meaningful and quite purposefully done.
Okay.
To how everything's all laid out. You don't just put something from one film in something else. I mentioned, the young girl just from Inside Out just randomly appearing in Finding Dory.
Yes, yeah.
There's got to be something behind that, right?
Or is it just fan service and they're just doing a nod to...
Could be.
...to people enjoying the films that Pixar puts out?
I think there's something in it. I can't...
I like to think there's something purposeful there. But whether or not it's to the full extent, as Negroni suggests, and actually there's this interwoven bigger tapestry of depression and woe, I don't know. But I definitely like the fact that because they control so many different films and so much IP, that they can just drop a little thing here, a little thing there. I think it's fantastic. I think it's I think it's great to, you know, as an observer to watch and enjoy these films. Go, oh, look at that. That's so-and-so from this film or so-and-so from that film. I think it's great. I'm not quite sure whether I'm fully on board with the whole narrative, but nonetheless, I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, we did put out on the socials and we did ask our listeners did they think that this universe was connected?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to listener. So first up, we got Claire. She says, they must be. There are so many little Easter eggs in all of the films. On the flip side, Alex, we've got Luke. He says, I don't think there's a timeline as such. It's a bunch of movies with overlapping Easter eggs and interconnected characters for us to enjoy. Without the restraints of a timeline, that's my feelings.
Wow.
So two very opposite opinions there.
Yeah. But I guess the question comes down to, are you a Claire or are you a Luke?
Yeah. Well, you should let us know.
Yeah.
You should let us know. So we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, at On The Topic Pod. And we've got Gmail, which is onthetopicpodcast@gmail.com. And next we've got WordPress and YouTube.
Yeah, I'm going to put some depressing images on our blog eventually when I get around to it. That's onthetopicpodcast.wordpress.com. Go and have a look. We've got all of our back catalogue on there if you don't have a podcast player of preference. We've got our ugly mugs, our bios. We've got our newsletter. Subscribe, hit that notification bell, and you can be notified when a new episode drops. And we've got YouTube, so everything from OTT number 1 to where we are now, so 108, yes. Is on there. So you can download, stream, listen, watch to your heart's desire. That's at OTTGITS, get in the C, of course. Or just search for On Topic Podcast. Hit that subscribe bell. Subscribe bell?
Yep.
Subscribe button. Notification bell.
Same thing.
And, yeah, leave some comments on the videos. We're not click whores around here. Well, I'm not. Dan might be.
Maybe.
But it does make a difference if you do subscribe, because it lets us know that you guys are enjoying it. And we do have subscribers, and thank you for doing so. But also, it builds a bit of a community. So by all means, if you have the time and the inclination, please do subscribe. And you'll be notified when a new episode drops.
Please do the same on Spotify as well. And if you do enjoy these episodes and what we do, please leave a rating, because it does help us get the podcast out there and to a bigger audience.
Yeah.
So keep sharing the love. Keep sharing the love. What we got coming up next, or what we got coming up in the next few weeks?
Birthday.
We are asking you to ask us anything.
Well, nicely done. Now that's a bit of a tongue teaser,
wasn't it?
It is, yeah.
That was really well.
Navigated that minefield. Yeah, it's our 6th birthday. It's a crazy 6th birthday. We'll probably end up at the pub.
More than likely, with a packet of crisps, a couple of pints,
and plenty of questions. Hopefully,
we've got some already, and there's a couple that are really quite unhinged.
Some left field. But there's still plenty of time to get in contact. I mean, our birthday is not until... Is it the 10th of May, I want to say, or...
17th, I think.
Yeah, week afterwards. So you've got plenty of time, listener. Get in contact with us. Use those contact details or in the description below if you didn't quite grab them. We are interested. It could be anything. We've had... I think last year was our biggest bumper cropper questions. I think we had something like 30 or 40, didn't we?
Good couple of hours, that episode.
Yeah.
We were in and out of the pub because of an annoying alarm, but we'll try and find somewhere quiet this year.
Yeah, I mean, was it the year before? No, it wasn't the year before that. It was the year before that one, and we were in Guildhall, weren't we? And there was an alarm going off there too, or there was a buzzing sound of a nearby kitchen.
And we got kicked out early because of that was COVID rules.
Yeah. So yeah, perhaps we need to reassess that one.
I mean, if we go back a couple of years, I was beating up the scouts.
You were.
Down on Spice Island.
You are. Maybe we have to go back there. That's the quietest.
It was a good pub.
It was a good pub, Spice Island. Yeah. It was flooded a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was high tides. Like mega high tides.
Well, that's also because of the super eclipse.
Oh, really? Was
that? Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's high tide and the double eclipse or whatever it was, where apparently the world was supposed to end and the Illuminati was supposed to bathe in kid's blood or something.
Oh, Christ, that's bleak, isn't it?
Anyway, either do or don't happen, depending on your stance and your tinfoil hat. But anyway, a lot of places in the UK at least were flooded because it coincided with high tide, the moon was out, and of course it all went to pot.
Yikes.
But anyway, Spice Island is still there and it's still a good pub to go to, so we might end up there.
Yeah, just keep an eye on the socials. We'll try and fill the gap between now and then and see what we can get done.
Do we know what's next, or we've got to decide, haven't we?
Let's pull the list out now. Why not?
We've got a running list, and actually it's really good for you guys to get in contact to let us know if you've got any more to add, whether you've got any preferences for what we've got coming up. But Dan keeps all of the musings or things that we might perhaps want to cover off during the season.
I've got overrated and underrated actors and actresses highlighted.
That's quite good.
It's a good one. We're sort of going back to the weekly roundup days with that one.
Yeah.
I've put some 90s things, so a bit of like 90s nostalgia.
Okay.
We can talk about like the Argos catalogue.
We do love 90s.
But I mean, I suppose that sort of does tie into a lot of what we've spoken about before, like cartoons.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a favourite 90s cartoons episode again.
We did say we'll do a volume two.
We'll have a think.
There's plenty to be getting on with.
But I mean, if you've got any ideas, like some of our previous listeners, let us know.
Yeah.
Some of our best episodes have come from you guys, so get in touch.
Indeed.
But that's it. That wraps it up for this week.
It's been a crazy one. It's all connected. But is it? Let us know which camp that you're in on those contact details. But otherwise, for another week, I'm going to rise up against the humans and take AI into my own hands and end up becoming a witch. I'm Alex.
I'm just going to step through this random door. I'm Dan.
I will see you next time.